1, 2, 3, infinity. In this podcast of A Brief History of Mathematics, the 19th century mathematician George Cantor ventures where others have feared to tread and shows that infinity isn't easy. I'm Professor Marcus de Sotoy, and this is one of 10 programmes first broadcast on BBC Radio 4 that are available for you to collect and keep at bbc.co.uk/podcasts. The teacher asks the class, what's the biggest number? A trillion billion, George announces. What about a trillion billion and one? The teacher responds. Well, I was close, George replies. Numbers go on forever. You give me a number, I'll give you a bigger one. For thousands of years, mathematicians thought infinity was beyond their understanding. But at the turn of the 20th century, the German mathematician George Cantor tackled the problem of infinity head on. He showed us how to carry on counting when the numbers run out. For me, it's one of the most exciting moments in mathematical history. It's like the moment we counted for the first time. But instead of 1, 2, 3, we were counting infinities. Cantor revealed that infinity is itself a number. In fact, infinitely many numbers. A revelation that profoundly challenged the mathematical establishment. Roger Penrose.
Cantor's real achievement was to show that there are infinities which are bigger than others. Some infinities are bigger than other infinities. Now, that's absolutely astounding. It's not just infinity or finite. There are big infinities, huge infinities, absolutely stupendously huge infinities, and it keeps on going.
A Brief History of Mathematics with Marcus de Sotoy.
So far, in this brief history of mathematics, I found the relationship between mathematics and science to be quite intimate. But in the middle of the 19th century, mathematics and science start to drift apart. The neo-humanist movement of Wilhelm von Humboldt encouraged mathematicians in Germany to think more creatively and in a much more abstract way. And nowhere was this put into practice more than in Göttingen. It was here that Gauss had begun to reshape mathematics, here that Riemann had pushed people into hyperspace, and it was here that the next giant of German mathematics, George Cantor, aspired to do his research. Cantor graduated from the University of Berlin, where he worked under the eminent mathematician Leopold Kronecker. After his doctorate, he moved to the tiny town of Halle in eastern Germany. He intended Halle to be a stepping stone on his way to the mecca of mathematics, Göttingen. But Cantor was going to push mathematics into ever more abstract worlds that even the Göttingen mathematicians would find unpalatable. He was drawn to the idea of trying to capture infinity, something that most mathematicians at the time thought to be impossible. The mathematics that Cantor created is beautiful. Speaking as a mathematician myself, his are some of my favourite theorems. If I were ever banished to a desert island, it's Cantor's creation that I would take with me. But at the time, Cantor's ideas alienated the one man who should have been his most important advocate, Kronecker.
I don't know what predominates in Cantor's theory, philosophy or theology, but I am sure that there is no mathematics there.
In some sense, Kronecker was right. Cantor's ideas were bordering on philosophy and would challenge the very foundations of mathematics. Cantor fought back, writing directly to the Minister of Education about Kronecker's behaviour.
I knew precisely the immediate effect this would have, that in fact Kronecker would flare up as if stung by a scorpion, and with his reserve troops would strike up such a howl that Berlin would think it had been transported to the sandy deserts of Africa with its lions, tigers and hyenas. It seems that I have actually achieved this goal.
Such comments did not endear Cantor to the mathematical community. He began to have difficulty publishing his ideas, let alone getting them accepted. Soon after, he received another knockback, this time from the influential Swedish mathematician Mittag Leffler, who was also editor of the important mathematical journal Acta Mathematica.
I am convinced that the publication of your new work, before you have been able to explain new positive results, will greatly damage your reputation among mathematicians. It may well be that you and your theory will never be given the justice you deserve in your lifetime.
Cantor was severely thrown by the rejection he received from a mathematician he greatly respected.
I suddenly received a letter from Mittag Leffler, in which he wrote, to my great astonishment, that after serious consideration he regarded this publication as about 100 years too soon. Had Mittag Leffler had his way, I should have had to wait until the year 1984, which to me seemed too great a demand.
This opposition from Mittag Leffler and Kronecker ensured that Cantor never did make it to Göttingen. Instead, he spent the rest of his days in the backwaters of Halle, where he began to feel increasingly isolated.
This view of the infinite, which I consider to be the sole correct one, is held by only a few. While possibly I am the very first in history to take this position so explicitly, I know for sure that I shall not be the last.
He suffered from bouts of manic depression, and the controversy about his mathematics only made things worse. His battle with the establishment and the death of his mother, brother, and youngest child began to take its toll on Cantor. He was admitted to the Nevin Clinic in Halle, where, on and off, he spent much of the last few decades of his life. Nevertheless, his insights unlock the secrets of one of the most mysterious mathematical concepts, infinity.
Hey, I'm coming in out there, lovely fresh English strawberries here today. He's going to give me 150 a big box here today.
Yeah, I'd love some strawberries. How many have you got there?
8 boxes, mate.
Cantor, like questions, thought of numbers as the answer to the question, how many? And his great insight was to imagine that there were only 4 numbers. The numbers 1, 2, 3, and lots. So, let's say I want to buy some strawberries. Now, the grocer here's got lots of strawberries, and I've got lots of coins. But even if we can't count, because we've only got the numbers 1, 2, 3, and lots, we can still see who has more strawberries or coins. And it's done like this. We're going to pair the first strawberry with my first coin, the second strawberry with my second coin, and so on until either I run out of coins and he's got more strawberries, or he runs out of strawberries and I've got more coins, or we run out together and we've got the same amount. Cantor applied the same idea to the concept of infinity. For example, he found that the infinity of whole numbers is the same size as the infinity consisting of even numbers. Suppose I've got infinitely many coins in my pocket, labelled with numbers from 1, 2, 3, all the way up to infinity. Now, the grocer here has apples labelled with even numbers, 2, 4, 6, etc. Cantor showed that there's a way the grocer can use up all my money. He pairs each of the coins in my pocket with the apple that is double the number on the coin. So, coin 1 is paired with apple 2, coin 2 with apple 4, 3 with 6. And in this way, the infinity of all whole numbers is the same size as the infinity of all even numbers. Strange, but true. But the real surprise came when he tried to match whole numbers with decimal numbers. This time, he found he couldn't do it. In fact, he proved that there are always more decimal numbers than there are whole numbers. So, if we were to take an infinite number of, I know, what's the most exotic fruit we got here? Kumquats, for example, and label them with all the possible decimal numbers, I'd find that however hard I try to pair up my coins with the kumquats, I'd fail. There'd always be kumquats left over. Or, put it more formally, the infinity of all infinite decimal expansions of numbers is a genuinely bigger sort of infinity than the infinity of whole numbers. There's more than one infinity.
In fact, there are infinitely many infinities. Now, if you found that all a bit baffling, don't worry. So did Cantor's contemporaries, including some of the finest mathematical minds of the 19th century. Cantor showed us how to carry on counting when we get to the end of our numbers. This insight is what turned Cantor's theory from a harmless collection of mind games into a deep insight. He showed that there can be infinite sets of different sizes. More strange results followed. There's no biggest set. Given an infinite set, you can always make one that is bigger. But the question that really vexed Cantor concerned the nature of the infinite set of decimal numbers. Yes, it's bigger than the set of whole numbers, but could there be a set in between? Strictly bigger than the set of whole numbers, or the coins I had, and strictly smaller than the set of decimal numbers, or kumquats. One day he'd prove there was, the next he'd prove the opposite. And the reason Cantor was having so much trouble answering his own question was that, some decades later, it was shown that both answers are correct. A revelation that threw many areas of mathematics into crisis. Cantor's ideas about infinity led to the discovery that mathematics itself has limitations. The great Austrian logician Kurt Gödel, inspired by Cantor's problem, proved in the 1930s that there are statements about numbers that are true, but that you cannot prove. Roger Penrose is famous for understanding the mathematics of black holes. More recently, he's turned his attention to the human brain. And he believes Cantor's mathematics was the catalyst for new ideas about what makes our brains so special, and crucially, different from computers.
The argument that Cantor used to show that some infinities are larger than other infinities, which is a very striking thing, the very argument that he used, which is sometimes referred to as Cantor's diagonal slash, I personally think that these arguments shed a lot of light on the artificial intelligence debate. They're showing, as I would argue, that human understanding isn't what computers do. But it's a very delicate argument, and a lot of people, you know, argue with me about this. Particularly, I should say, mathematical logicians do sometimes, because I'm a bit sloppy sometimes. But then I notice after they're quibbling about details here that they then say, oh, well, yes, I completely agree with your contention that human understanding is not computable, you see. But it is strange, because you might say, what are we doing? Well, it's doing something which involves consciousness. That's what I would say. Because understanding itself, I would certainly argue, is something that involves our conscious awareness. It seems not to make much sense to say that you understand something if you're not even aware of it. So the awareness is coming into this very crucially. And the Gödel thing does depend on the infinite. If we were just, you know, working with finite things, then the Gödel argument would have no relevance. So it has to do with appreciation of the infinite. And so, yes, it goes back to Cantor. Cantor was the crucial linchpin of this type of reasoning.
At the dawn of the 20th century, mathematicians began to recognise the amazing mathematics that Cantor had created. David Hilbert, who was emerging as the leading mathematician of his generation in the world, declared Cantor's work to be
the most astonishing product of mathematical thought, one of the most beautiful realisations of human activity. No one shall expel us from the paradise that Cantor has created.
The very question that Cantor had asked was chosen by Hilbert as the first of 23 problems with which he challenged the mathematicians of the new century. Can you prove that no infinite set is larger than the set of whole numbers, but smaller than the set of decimal numbers? By the middle of the 20th century, far from being criticised, Cantor was embraced by mainstream mathematics. Today, his theory of infinity is on every undergraduate syllabus. 100 years on, Mittag Leffler's prediction came true. Cantor was indeed a century ahead of his time. Cantor's ideas are some of the most beautiful and extraordinary of the last 300 years. He's allowed mathematicians to touch infinity, to play with it, compute with it, to finally recognise that infinity is a number. Not just one number, but infinitely many numbers. Thanks for listening to this podcast from BBC Radio 4 with me, Marcus Desotoy. And if you enjoyed this episode, don't forget you can collect the whole set, all 10 episodes of A Brief History of Mathematics, as well as the terms and conditions, can be found at bbc.co.uk/podcasts.